So today's topic is going to be the Malach in Halacha. It's not going to turn into an art scroll book. But we're going to try to identify some elements in Halacha which are really patterned after or related to Malachim in general. Before we even begin, we need to really need to diffuse some misconceptions as to what a Malach is. And you see, part of the reason why we have misconceptions is because, you know, in a certain way, a lot of Christian theology has filtered through into our imagination. And so when we think of, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you think of a Malach is going to be a little child with wings on their back, with definitely rosy cheeks and perhaps even a halo. And the reason why that actually arrived, that is part of our imagination, is because a lot of Christian theology takes what is very cerebral, very ethereal ideas and really concretizes them into very black and white images, which is a tragedy, because we adopt that as if it is Torah Misinai, and it's very much not so. A lot of the Christian imagery that we get is also a function of originally Jewish sources. You know, when it talks about Yechezkel seeing these images in the Ma'aseh Merkava, he talks about wings, but they're not the type of wings that were fluffy dove wings which are attached to children. And also when the Gemara talks about the faces of the Kruvim, the Gemara in Sukkah notes that it's Karavia. It's like the face of a child. So, you know, when you take things too literally, whatever ends up happening inevitably is you create a certain form that remains in our minds for eternity. However, it's important to look at the primary sources in our tradition to understand what a Malach truly is. So one of the perhaps the most interesting perspectives, one which I think is completely unintuitive to our sensitivities, is the way the Rambam looks at this. The Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim and in other places, but this is one example, says the following. We're not going to read the whole paragraph, but just a few lines. He says, V'kfar yodata, she'inyan malach, what is the notion of a malach? He says, shliach. We call oise maise mitzvah hu malach. Any form of force which performs a mitzvah is a malach. Ad sheh tenua tenuos baalei chayim vafilu sheeno medabrim siper hakosav aleim shehem al yedei malach. Kishetava tenua hahi lekavona sabore. So what the Rambam says is that the instinctual nature in animals, will perhaps the way the universe works, the hidden force behind the universe, which is the glue, which is the mechanisms of everything, is the Malachim. Right? So I mean to say, when you see a natural phenomenon taking its course, the Rambam says that natural phenomenon is a Malach. We think, well, that's the way it works. He says, no. The way you get from point A to point B is, in fact, a Malach. Dropping a few lines down to, there's a period in the 12th line, he says, "V'hinei yispar lecha shemalach yomar al shliach." That a malach is a messenger, and it could be min ha'anoshim vayishlach Yaakov malachim vayomer lanavi vayal malach Hashem min agilgal el aboichim vayishlach malach v'yotzen mimitzrayim. And it could be that it's referring actually to a person. So sometimes when it says that Yaakov sent malachim, the Rama understands that means flesh and blood. Regular people. A malach could be a messenger. However, the opposite side of the extreme is v'yomar al ha'sichlim ha'nifrodim she'yiru l'nevim b'mare ha'nevuah v'yomer el ha'koychos ha'chiyunois k'moish nisbar v'dibarnu heino. Or it could be, as we just spoke about, says the Rambam, some sort of cerebral force which you cannot see, and the only way to access that force and to see it is through prophecy. Right, so according to the Rambam, a malach could mean actually a human being, right? That's when it's, because it means messenger literally. But when it talks about malach as we imagine it, it's not something you can see. It's not a being that has any actual finite existence or reality, says the Rambam. It's a force in the world which, if you are a Navi, you can tap into and see. Great. So the Rambam says the following. So the Rambam goes very far in this. The Rambam says in other places in Moreh Nevuchim, when describing this, you see Bereishis is full of Malachim. Part of the reason why we're actually focusing on this is because this coming week's parasha Vayesei is bookended with Malachim. Did you notice that Yaakov is walking out? He goes to sleep and he sees Malachim going up and down the ladder. But that's not the only Malachim in the parasha. At the end of the parasha, on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, he encounters a camp of Malachim. Right? So the parasha itself is framed with Malachim, and the Bereishis as a whole is very much is saturated with incidents of Malachim. So according to the Rambam understands that a Malach is not really any type of physical being, doesn't have any sort of reality. So what exactly happened with Avram? So according to the Rambam, you know, the way I remember one of my teachers, Rabbi Rivlin, used to say it is, you know, what position was Avram in when the angels came? So you're sitting, standing. So the Rambam would say he wasn't. He was lying down in his bed, and the entire time he was sleeping. Because according to the Rambam, Vayera is, the entire first section of Vayera is a dream. Terrifying. The whole thing changes. In fact, that's why the Rambam says as well, with the fight with the Malach, which we're about to encounter in 2 weeks' time, is also a dream. Because the Rambam can't comprehend that you can actually have a Malach, which is a physical being, which is, we'll call this semi-spiritual, semi-physical being, at least in its appearance in this world. Unbelievable. Completely revolutionary.
What does he say when Avram came, when they came into the tent?
Yes, so it's all part of the dream. All part of the dream. We're going to see in a second the critique on that.
By Lord, that the reason he understood that it was a mitzvah to do it is because that was not a dream anymore. The fact that he saw the malachim wasn't a dream, and therefore he understood he could leave the Rabbanu Shalom and do the mitzvah.
Okay, no. So we're going to see in a second how he explains in the Peshat.
What about
Sarah? One second. So yes, Sarah's laughing as well. We're going to see that's a critique on the Rambam. But one thing we need to just consider in the background over here is the more you do the Rambam, the more you see something very interesting. And that is that one of the 13 Ikarim of the Rambam, perhaps later on in a few weeks' time we'll maybe have a chance to discuss that in more depth, but one of the 13 principles of the Rambam that he lays down of Jewish faith is that God has no body. God has no physical reality, and therefore, even if a person were to think that, a person would actually lose their share in the world to come. Right? The Rambam is very firm about his way of understanding spiritual beings being completely spiritual, with no manifestation within this world. Similarly, when the Rambam understands the world to come, as opposed to the Ramban and most of the track of Jewish philosophy, the Rambam understands that Olam Haba is a place where there's absolutely no bodies. There's nothing. It's cerebral reality where Tzadikim Yoshim V'atrasem B'Roshehem. Rav Nenim in Ziva Shechina means to say that we're talking about a divine expression of something completely beyond bodily expression. And in a similar track, the Rambam understands that anything which is spiritual, like an angel, can only be perceived in a very spiritual way, and you can't encounter, and you can't shake hands, and you can't have anything else to do with it. However, this is taken to task with the Ramban. This is a very important Ramban. This relates to the beginning of Parshas Vayera. That's where it is. But this is essential in terms of understanding what a malach is or isn't. He says the following. I'm going to read it just because you can see the sharpness of the Ramban's language, the sharpness of the intellect of the Ramban in this particular instance, as many, many cases. He says the following in source 2. The Sefer Mor Nevuchim, Ne'amar ki parsha klal uprat, that the section of Vayera is a rule and a detail. Right? It's the general rule and how it expresses itself in details. How so? It says Vayera Olav Hashem, that God appeared to him, right? And all the Mefarshim struggle with the next pasuk, which is that there are three men, right? So what happens? So as Eliezer was saying beforehand, the most of the Mefarshim understand what happens. That Avram says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hold on a second, and he goes and gets the guest. And that's why the Chazal Darshan from there, that we know from here that it's better to receive guests than to even Kabbalah's Pnei Ashkina, because God was in his presence. That's what the Mefarshim say. Says, no, that's not what happened. He says, how did this vision of God express itself? He says, because in his vision, there were three men. The Rambam understands that God appears to him. That's the beginning of the dream. Here are the open inverted commas, and the rest is the dream. That's the way the Rambam understands it. Klal uprat, right? That's the rule. Now he has the details of what he's about to dream about. And then when he continues and he addresses him as Adonai, he's not referring to God, he's referring to the greatest of the angels in his dream as he's speaking. Says the Ramban, If it was all a vision, then he should have just seen the people already eating the meal. Meaning, why was he dreaming about them arriving and him getting it? Right? Where does the dream start? Where should the dream start? Wait a second. If God was appearing to him, God didn't appear in the dream. Right? The angels did. God wasn't in the dream. So it says the Ramban, wait a second. Hashem didn't appear to him. He may have given him the dream, but he wasn't appearing to him. Furthermore, he says, we don't find such instances in other prophecies. According to his ideology, then Sarah really never cooked or needed any of the cakes. Avram did not go and sacrifice the cow for the guests. This is perhaps more troubling, is that Sarah wasn't laughing, right? Meaning, that whole incident where she is reprimanded, that didn't occur according to the Rambam. Raka ko mare v'imkein bo achalam azeh b'roi v'inyan k'chalam osa sheker. So says the Ramban, then that means to say that this is a chalam with many, many details, and we know that in a dream which has many details, many of the details aren't true. Right? The Gemara in Brachos, the ninth perek, talks about dreams, and it says that most dreams not all of the pieces are actually reliable pieces. So how do we know in this dream, right? It says, why do we need to know the details? Why do we need that he's telling Yishmael to go and get the Ben Bakar in his dream? Right? It's too far-fetched, says the Ramban. He says, what about the angel that fought with him? He says, Shakom Mari Navua. Listen to the sharpness of this. He says, so when he woke up, why was he limping? Right? This is just a very powerful thought of the Ramban. He's meaning, there seems to be a psychosomatic, right? Seems to be that somehow the fight has left an enduring result.
The what?
The fight has left an enduring result.
Now we have halacha from it, right?
Right, we learn halachas from it. Right. Whereas according to the Rambam, it was all in his dreams, right? So this is because the Rambam doesn't understand or Oh, he's gonna get. I think he gets that as well. He says, let's jump down to the next paragraph. He says, "V'hinei lefi da'atoi zoisi tzorich lamar kein binyan lot." Then you start to say the same thing with Lot. Kiloi bo amelachin lo beis. So if Lot off all ahematzos vayachelu, when Lot encountered these angels, he didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't really actually invite them in. Now listen to this. Aval akol hayamare. V'im yale alot am es Lot lemalas mare anavua. Eich yiyu anshe sedom aroyim v'chatoim neviim. So how did the anshe sedom know that he had guests? Right, they were pretty evil people. The only way the Rambam says a person can access the seeing of Malach is through Nevuah. So how did they have Nevuah? How could they know he actually had a guest to fight against him? Kimi yigid lohem shebo anoshim el beis. So who told him? Who told them? Vima komaros Nevuah shalot yei vayoyitza melachim kum kach es ishtucha vayomar ha-himolet al nafshucha v'inei nosasi ponecha v'ko ha-parsha kulamari. If that's true, the whole parasha has to be a dream because they were talking to him the entire time. The Yishar Lot Bistom, and therefore the end result should be that he should be sleeping in his house when Sodom is destroyed. Right? Says the Ramban. Aval Yachshoiv Shayu Hamasim Nasim Mealehem Bamamorim Bechodavar Vedavar Mare Vele Advarim Soistrin Akos of Osul Shama Af Kilah Amin Bohem. You can't say this, you can't believe this. And by the way, you should know, when the Ramban quotes the Rambam and the Morin of Uchib, he quotes him with the utmost respect. And you see this in many times. He disagrees in many instances, but he has the utmost respect for the Rambam. The Ramban continues to say, and this is the last thing he's going to read. This is the last paragraph. He says, "Hinei b'chol makom yisoiru hachachomim loydienu kriya samalach einenu nevuah ve'ein royim haroyim malachim v'medabrim imom miklal neviim kasher iskarti b'Daniel." To see a malach, you don't need to be a prophet. Rather, aval himare tikra gilui einayim. When you see a malach, it's called a level of revelation of eyes. Somehow there's a veil which is removed from your eyes. Tikra gilu enayim kumoi vayogel Hashem es enei Bilam vayares malach Hashem. Hashem revealed the eyes of Bilam and he could see this entity. V'chein vayispala lisha vayom epkachno enechor vayira. So apparently an angel does exist, but you need to have a certain level of revelation to be able to see it. Similarly with Hagar, right, there's a number of instances where a person actually interacts with the Malach, says the Ramban, it's actually physical interaction. There is a level of interaction, but it's not that by default you're going to be interacting with them, right? Bilam was walking past that angel until the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him access to it. So they, in some way, do find manifestation within this world. So there's an incredible machlokes over here where between the Rambam and the Ramban as to the degree of existence that the Malach has as it transcends into this world and what the Malach really does. However, what is clear from both the Rambam and the Ramban is that a Malach is a force of God with a particular task at hand. Now, whether that's performing its task because that's the spiritual mechanisms that's going on according to the Rambam, or according to the Rambam, it's actually an entity which expresses itself in this world that you can interact with, that's a dispute. But the point is that it is a spiritual entity which is performing some mechanism of God in this world, and usually, as we know through Chazal, it's usually one service which is related to its name. And we're going to get back to the names of Malachim in a few moments. What I'd like to do with you in just the next few minutes is to cover some very interesting halachas which we know, and see how it's actually related to related to angels in general. When I started doing this topic, I found that it's an extremely vast topic. There are lots of elements of our practices on a day-to-day basis which relate to Malachim. And I found that there's so much to cover that what I was thinking of doing is, just heads up, is to leave Shalom Aleichem to next week. I think we'll give it a full discussion to Shalom Aleichem and perhaps Machnisei Rachamim for next week when it comes to how we address angels and ask them to do things like Baruchuni L'Shalom, bless me for peace, and you're speaking and addressing an angel. So we're going to have to see, we're going to spend a little more time to get fuller flesh over there. But in the meantime, let's concentrate on a few very interesting points. Some of these are known, some of them are less known, but let's see the background of them. So the first thing is a very interesting halacha, which is not actually practiced today in general. And that is, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, this is in Source 3, a person who enters the bathhouse or the bathroom, a person says, please, hiskabdu mechubadim, those who are honored, please be honored, the holy ones who serve God. So why is the person saying this at this point in time?
They're not going to the bathroom.
They're not going to the bathroom, right? So meaning to say, a person is taking leave. He's taking leave in a very polite way of Malachim. Why does he need to take leave of them? Because it seems to be clear from here that when your person's not in the bathroom, he's being escorted by angels. That's clear from this Gemara. There's a certain level of a person being escorted by angels to the degree that a person needs to actually take their leave when a person enters the bathroom. Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch says, this is in Simon Gimel, the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch Arachaim, Kishiyichnas lebeis akisa, yoymar hiskabdu mechubadim, a person should take leave of the angels who escort him. And he continues to say, Va'achshav loy na'agu la'omrei. Today, these days, we don't actually have the practice of saying it. Why would you think not? Why would the Shulchan Aruch say that this minhag is not prevalent today?
We're not on the level that.
So the Shulchan Aruch, the basic understanding of the Shulchan Aruch is who are you to presume that you're being escorted by angels today? Yeah. Meaning by saying, you know, okay, everybody, let's wait outside. That means to say that you're assuming that you are of a level where you're being escorted by angels. We don't necessarily presume that.
When was it?
So it seems certainly at the time of the Gemara, that was an extant custom. At which point between the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch it dropped by, not clear. The Sharit Shuva on the Shulchan Aruch says that this is not necessarily true across the board. He says, "B'Shulchan Aruch Ashav Lo Na'agu." He says, "I'm b'machzik bracha b'shem sefer mitzvah shemoyrim." He says that the Sefer Mitzvah says that a person should still say. V'chein Maram Pavrash calls the She'arizal Chidei Shlomra Gam Achshav V'vazei Yinatzel Shlo Yaharer BeDivrei Torah BeBeis Hakisei. Says the Arizal would carry on to say this. Apparently, the minhag had dropped by already before the time of the Arizal, who was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, he said you should say it because you know what it's going to do. It's going to save you from thinking about Divrei Torah in the bathroom, meaning. Meaning you need to create a divorce in order to be able to save yourself, because it's an inappropriate place to be thinking about Divrei Torah, where a person is conjuring up with spiritual matters in a place of impurity. So he says maybe this is only referring to people who are completely consumed in the learning of Torah, and they are fortunate enough to have a life where they're completely consumed in spirituality. So maybe to them, there's still room to say it. Like, Fine. Very interesting. This Chazal on this This Shulchan Aruch are actually going to come swing back next week when it comes back to Shalom Aleichem. So keep this in mind as to what the practice of saying Hiskabdu Mechubadim to these angels as that escort a person. That's level one. Let's go take it further. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the question is, are you being escorted specifically on Friday night? Meaning, on Friday night, there might be more of a level of to say that a person is being escorted by angels, everybody. Right? And that's what we're going to start with Shalom Aleichem. Okay, but this is going to relate to this, because this seems to be in general. It doesn't sound like Shabbos or not. This sounds to be a general statement. Now, in Tefillah, a lot of the practices that we actually have in Tefillah are related to Malachim themselves, being similar to them in a number of occasions. So, example number one. The Gemara tells us at the very top of page 3, this is the Gemara in Brachos. It says, "V'amar Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Chanina, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Hamispalal Tzorich Shiachavein Es Raglov." A person who davens, meaning what's it referring to when a person when the Gemara talks about davening, Yishmona Esra is the ikar part of Tzilah, is the central part. So therefore, Shneimar v'Ragleim Regel Yishara. We should have our legs together because why? The Pasuk says that they had Regel Yishara. What does that mean? Regel Yishara sounds like straight, and therefore, in a certain sense, a oneness. Where is this quoted from? Where's the source of this? Yecheskel Aleph. What's Yecheskel Aleph? Okay, so Yecheskel Aleph is one of the two occasions in Tanakh where it's a description of a human being with a window into the divine. It's called Ma'ase Merkava, or it's the vision of the chariot, where Yecheskel sees this vision of the throne of God. And in that, he describes the malachim he sees bearing the throne. And one of the descriptions he says is Reglehem Regel Yishara, that they're in a certain sense, they're this unified support. We're not going to say foot, because according to, certainly we're not talking about a physical description, but they have their support is singular. So in a certain sense, what do? In our tefillah, we now approximate malachim when we do that, which is why we put our legs together. Very fascinating. That's where it comes from. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Paskin Halacha, in Source 7, Yechavin Raglov Eze Eitzel Ze, Ki'ilu Einon Elo Echad, as if they're one, Leidamos La Malachim, to be similar to the angels, Dechsiv Raglaim Regal Yeshara. Kilomar, what does that mean? Raglaim Nirim Karegal Echad, their feet seem like one. Fine. That's the Shulchan Aruch Paskin. The Mishnah Berurah adds to that. In Halacha, in Source 8, Yechavin Raglov B'diavad, Afilu Im Lo Kivein Raglov Klal Yatsa. Says the Rishon Lezion, if you didn't, it doesn't uproot the Shmona Esrei, but it's perhaps a mode of the Shmona Esrei being accepted. And he says an interesting thing. This is actually related to travel today. He says, Lidamos Lamalachim, Shekevon Shemedabir Im Hashchina, Tzorech Lesalek Kol Machshavas Aguf B'Liboy, B'Ladamos Ki'ilu Hu Malach. Because why in Tefillah we're supposed to be like a malach? Now, by the way, that isn't just homiletics over here. What that means to say is that if you imagine this, one thing that most of the Mefarshim agree is that a malach doesn't have free will, right? When you're addressing a malach isn't a being that you can negotiate with and he makes his own decisions, which is part of the problem of asking malachim to do things for you, right? Right, it's part of the problems of asking malachim to do things is they don't have their own free will, which is, by the way, that's where when we move towards Christianity and you talk about the notions of Satan, and Satan worship, there's no such thing in Judaism because Satan is an agent, right? Satan, the Satan is Samael is a agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He does Hashem's bidding, right? So at this point in time, what does it mean ladamis le malachim? That means to say that a person is reaching a point where he's sublimating the way he acts or would act. The reactions or the actions that he would have to the point where he becomes in line and in tune with the Creator for a few minutes in his day. That's what the Mishnah Berurah is essentially trying to tell us. Now he says an interesting thing which relates to plane travel for us. He says the following: "Vafilu imu yoshev ba'agala." This is the end of the first line. "Vafilu hu yoshev ba'agala." If you're sitting in a car, translation: Boeing 747. Mikomak miachaven raglov. A person should nevertheless, and you can't stand up, right? It depends. In El Al, they always have a minion in the back. I remember one time I was flying in El Al, and three things happened in one. Nate serving breakfast in turbulence. And then, and so you had, Adoni, so you have this this man trying to get up, and this stewardess trying to tell him to sit down. And anyway, it gets very exciting. Rav Shlomo Zalman is of the opinion that a person, when it comes to a plane, it's better to sit down and daven individually, even at the cost of Tula B'Tzibur. So he says, in such a case, Mikol Mokum Yechaven Raglov. You can't stand up, what do? Your feet still need to be together. Isn't that interesting? It's not just about standing, it's about the feet being together, even during the tefillah. A person shouldn't lean back, shouldn't lean forward, as if, you know, like, and cross his feet in front of him, like, you know, under his proverbial desk, right? Because that's a way of haughtiness. But it's interesting that this notion of the feet together even translate into a place where you're not even standing. That's just an interesting extension of this. That's point number one. However, it goes a little further. So up till now, if you're to describe where is it required that our feet need to be together, it's only in which area of davening? Shmoneh Esrei, right? That's where we come from. Why? Because in the Shmoneh Esrei we're like Melachim, but it extends further. The Gemara tells us, this is a famous Gemara. The Gemara says, where does that come from? Says the Gemara the following. Chavivim Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu yosemim malachei ha-shareis. Israel's more dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than angels. She Yisrael omrim shira b'chol sha u'malachei ha-shareis enor mishira ela pamachas b'yom v'omri lo pamachas b'shabbos, omri lo pamachas b'chodesh, omri lo pamachas b'shona, omri lo pamachas b'shavua, omri lo pamachas b'yovel, omri lo pamachas b'olam. So the Gemara says that Israel is more dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we can say Kedusha at any point in the day we want to, whereas Malachim have specific set times, and the Gemara discusses how frequently they are able to say Shira. It might mean on an individual basis. Okay? That an angel is able to say Shira, that an angel is able to sing to God. So we have, and this is part of the notion of free will, that we have the ability to be able to access it when we want to. Take it further. The Gemara says the following. We say Hashem's name, Shema Yisrael, two letters, and then two words, and then Hashem Elokeinu, whereas the Malachim can only say Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos, that we say Hashem's name after three words. And this is the part which we're perhaps familiar with, which the Malachim are only enabled to say the Shira in the divine realms when the humans, we're the catalyst to that process where we say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh in our Kedusha below. Shenemar, Baran, Yachad, Koichve Bakar, Vahada, Vayaril, Kobene Elohim. Fine, beautiful. How does that translate into Halacha? The Shulchan Aruch tells us in verse 11, Tov lechaven raglov gam b'shash omer Kedusha imashliach tzibur. Not only when you're davening Shmoneh Esrei, but even when you're doing Kedusha, a person should have his legs together. Why? Says the Mishnah Berurah in Source 12. Gam b'shah sharei omrim, k'shem shemakdishin osai b'shmei moron. What are we doing? Let nekadesh shimcha, let us sanctify your name, as they do where? In heaven. And therefore, if you're doing it as they do in heaven, you act like they do in heaven. And therefore, you keep your legs together even for Kedusha. Is that interesting? By the way, to me, it's always, whenever I say Kedusha, something that I think about, and that is that, you know, when we talk about Kiddush Hashem in the world, there's Kiddush Hashem as the world sees it, right? And we act as moral, upstanding human beings, and we, in the world, they look around us, we represent a much bigger entity and enterprise than ourselves when we walk out in the streets and in the business halls. At the same time, there's also a level of Kiddush Hashem, which is Kishen Shemakdishim Osa Bishmei Marom, which is that we sanctify Hashem like the angels do, which is not about the Jew on the front page of the paper. It's about a very spiritual, subtle thing where a person is saying the Kadesh Shimcha Ba'olam, and a person is saying the words of Kedusha. There's the internal Kiddush Hashem and there's the external Kiddush Hashem. And this is the internal one because this mode is Kashem Shemakdi Shemasa Bishma Aram, like they do in heaven, right? Which is a very, very, very private type of Kiddush Hashem. Just to be aware of the two different types. And therefore, we approximate the way they do it. And even more than this, there's actually a very interesting knaich in that. Which I didn't realize until recently. That is, the Shulchan Aruch says in Source 13, Tov lechaven raglo b'shash omer kedushoi meshliach tzibur. That's what we saw before. This is a separate halacha, but it's said this again. Hagod, the Ramah says, V'yesh lisol einayim lamaram, b'shash omerim kedusha. Person should raise their eyes to heaven when they're saying kedusha. V'chem enanim gufon v'noisin oisamin oretz. The person should move their body, shake their body, and try to lift themselves up from the ground when they're doing kedusha. Right? Where does that come from? What is that referring to? Says the Mishnah Berurah. V'chem enanin hashlokos al shekibl kabala biyadoi sheyorim gufoi va'akevo lamala b'baruch v'yimloch kamoi b'kadosh. The Shlach Kadosh would say that a person should go onto their tippy toes, right, as they're saying the three sections, Nekadesh, Baruch, and Yimloch of the Kedusha. A person should raise themselves up. Where does this come from? If you flip backwards for one moment, the Midrash Tanchuma says, it was a very interesting early source. The Midrash Tanchuma says in Source 10, V'shtayim yo'ifeif. This is referring to the malachim that were seen in the Ma'as Merkava, that they, with two wings, they would fly. V'chibik knafayim yo'ifeif. Did they fly with the wings? Ela mikan tiknu zichronim nivracha la'uf Adam al raglov b'shosha amir shliach tzibur kadosh kadosh kadosh. When we're acting like the malachim who are saying in the heavens immediately after us, kadosh kadosh kadosh, we are going to, in a certain sense, fly like them. Right? So therefore, where does that, so says the Shlach HaKadosh, so therefore what do? We lift ourselves up almost as if we're trying to fly, because at that point in time, we're at the highest spiritual point of our day when we're acting like malachim. Yeah, it goes even further. So what's closer to flying than lifting yourself up on your toes is? What's the next best way? Jumping. So the Mishnah Berurah actually addresses that. The Mishnah Berurah in the next source, actually in source 14, in the Sivkot Neches says, he quotes the Mishnah Tanchuma, at the end of the first line, he says, he says, don't jump. Right, meaning, if you want to take this to the furthest degree, you could say that you should jump up and down for Kedusha. He says,
I see them used to.
So he addresses that. He says, but we see it. In some places, you see people jumping up and down. He says, Minag Yisrael Torah, don't argue with the Minag. But if it hasn't started yet and you're establishing a new shul, don't start it. Because what's going to end up happening is it's going to cause pandemonium, and you're going to lose everything you're trying to gain by what's going to happen during Kedusha. So you see, by the way, just the degree that this notion of the Tanchuma is uvishtayim yo'afeif means to say not only is our raglaim together like an angel, but in a certain sense we're elevating ourselves like those angels themselves. So let's do one or two. There's one or two more. Yes.
What does the Rambam say about all this with mice and merchomo and angels, the wings and the legs? What is the Rambam?
I'm not intimately familiar, but the Rambam does say in Hilchos Yisrei HaTorah that there's two levels of understanding the underpinnings of creation. One is Maaser Merkav, and one is called Maaser Bereishis, and a person shouldn't be taught that in public. So the Rambam obviously understands that there are certain very fundamental principles that are involved there, and I know that Reb David's got a lot of research on this. So perhaps afterwards we can discuss the details of that, because this is deep and more in Vukim.
Why does an angel need wings?
Does the angel need wings, or is it a description of something that is it a capacity that they have?
Anthropomorphism.
Right, meaning the wings are talked about in Yecheskel are not wings that we imagine as flying. We're talking about wings with different sides and four different faces. It's not we're not talking about physical pictures over here. So it might be a representative of a certain capacity they have. There's two items I'd like to just address very briefly with you, and that is Baruch Shem Kavod. And naming, in a sense, we'll get there in just a moment. The Devarim Rabbah says the following. This I never realized until recently as well. I had a different pshat in Baruch Shem, which is, says the following. Davarach Shema Yisrael, listen to Israel. Rabbanon Omrim b'shosh olam Moshe l'amaram. When Moshe ascended to heaven, Shema l'malachi Asher shoy Omrim la'kosh Baruch Hu Baruch Shem Kavod Malchusol le'lam vo'ed. When he went up to heaven, when did he go up to heaven? To receive the Torah, right? By the way, where is Shema Yisrael written in the Torah? Which parasha? Vayeschanan. What immediately precedes Vayeschanan in the Torah? What immediately precedes Shema Yisrael in the Torah is the Aseret Dibros in Vayeschanan. Just out of interest, right? So the Shema Yisrael is told to us in the Torah immediately following the Aseret Dibros. So when Moshe says the Midrash, it must be connected. When Moshe went up to heaven, he learned something very interesting, and that was Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vayeshiv Yisrael Yisrael, and he brought it down to Israel. So therefore, when he says Shema Yisrael, in a certain sense, he's teaching them something, right? It's interesting that that's the way the Midrash seems to be interpreting it. V'lomar Ein Yisrael Omrim Mosav V'Pariyasu. So why don't we say it proudly, right? In the end of the day, right? That's something we got from heaven. It says Omer Yasi Lomar Lamadav Adomer Leechod Sheganav Kuzmin Mitoch Paltin Shel Melech. Doesn't steal some sort of very precious item from the women's jewelry from the king's palace. And he gives it to his wife. And he says, "Al tiskashti b'fariyasi." Don't wear it in public, right? Right? We'll appreciate this in quiet. On Yom Kippur, where we are like malachim, We do say Baruch Shem explicitly. There's another, the explanation that I was schooled with about Baruch Shem Kavod was that the Malachim get angry, not because it was stolen, but because there's six words, right? There's Baruch Shem Kavod Machzor Olam Va'ed, and the two center words, right? The Kavod Malchusai are no longer really appropriate in a diaspora reality. Meaning, the Kavod Malchusai, the honor of his kingship, is very much not true. As we see today, even today, when you read the newspaper reports, it's clear that what we should be representing, when you see a nation, represents the highest mores and values. And constantly, time and time again, the world supports the side which is the side of hate and anger and killing and murder and vengeance. There's something missing, right? There's something missing in the world. You cry and you wish that the world could see what we're supposed to be representing, what we're supposed to be the chariot of God in the world, and it isn't there. So if we were to say publicly, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Va'ed, it's just not apt. So we say it quietly, except on the day when we're like Malachi HaShoris, where we're perhaps one level higher in terms of delivering that message, and therefore that's the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that on a regular day we say B'chashai, quietly, but on Yom Kippur we say B'kol Ram. Interestingly enough, the Shulchan Aruch adds one last thing in source 19. This is in Siman Tav Resh Yud. It says Yesh Shekosav V'Shenagu Lilbosh Begadim Levonim Nekiim B'Yom Kippur. Why do we wear white clothing on Yom Kippur? He says Dugmas Malachi Asharis, because in the same way that we can say Baruch Shem Kavod on that day explicitly because we like Malachim, we also act like them in the way that we dress. That's why we wear the kitzel. Another reason is because a person thinks about the shrouds of a person who's deceased.
Why don't
they
wear it on Rosh Hashanah?
What was that? Certainly on Yom Kippur we're like Malachim. There's differing minhags as to Rosh Hashanah. I know where I grew up, most people wore it. In America, most people don't wear it from in the communities that I've seen on Yom Kippur, but the people who are involved directly in the service do. Not sure the Rosh Hashanah element of it, but certainly Yom Kippur seems to be the one that is predominant. I'm going to skip for just a moment because of time considerations, the Aramaic element, which is a very fascinating thing. Maybe we'll follow up on that next week. But I want to come back to one last interesting element, which is to be found in the halacha of naming. This is the Sefer Oitzer HaBris, which is an incredible compendium of everything you want to know and everything perhaps you would never have thought of knowing about a bris milah. And he says in the section under how you name your child, he says the following: Yesh Shem Pikpaku. This is on the last page, the very bottom, where it says, "Hey, Yesh Pikpaku al Elu Shekorin es Shem Bneiam Shalom." So yeah, some people say, "Don't call your children Shalom." Okay, that's not the end of the sentence. Don't worry if you have any Shaloms in your family. Mikavon Shehu Shmol Shalom.
I didn't give myself the name.
right, no implications meant. And don't worry, why? You shouldn't be naming anybody after Hashem. Says, don't worry, it's all right. You can call by that name. However, he says, you can also call people by the names of Malachim. He says, Kogoin, Raphael, Gabriel, Michael, right? We know people of these names. Aval, Shem Oriel, Yesh Lahakbishak Pirul Shalolikra. Some people said you shouldn't say the name Oriel. Right? You don't know so many people with that name. He goes, dropping down to the footnote, he says, Zecher David. Uriel. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so there's a machlokes on that. He says, Vehevi smachel ozeh. Yeah, so once again, I think that's Oriel as opposed to Uriel. Right? In Lechadoidi, we say Oiri, and then we say Uri. Those are two different words. One is my light, and one is wake up, right? Uri, yeah, right. Right, so it depends if there's an ayin or an aleph. He says, Zecher David, Shom, Vehevi smachlos zeh me'amedrush dvorim rabo. Reish lakish omar, Shemos ha-malachim, Olu mi-Bavel, Michael, Raphael, v'Gavriel. The Midrash Rabbah says that certain names of the Malachim actually ascended with us from Babylon. Interesting. Apparently from that time onwards, that's when we could call people by the names of angels. Says you shouldn't use the name Oriel. Why? Because the angel which appeared to the Eshes Manoach and later to Manoach was in fact Oriel, and when he asked for his name, what was the answer? I'm not telling you. So don't give a name of an angel who refused to reveal his identity. It's fine to do that. Now listen to this very, very fascinating last point here. This is such an incredible insight. What's the reason why some angels we can name after and some angels we can't? Right? You don't hear anybody called Kasriel. Or you actually, yes. They, I actually do know somebody. But there are certain names of angels. When you go through the Midrashim and Zohar, you'll see that never have hit mainstream name calling. He says, why? She'en karin echad me'ashem es ha-melachim, kefi she'shama mi'raboy, dekasha kodesh baruch hu kora ha-melachim, va'meshamshim tzivo oysom, deche she'yikru'u oysom, v'yashbiu oysom she'yavol. Their name is their mission. An angel's name is their mission. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instills in their very nature that when their name is heard, they automatically appear. V'lochein, bizman she'odam mazkir oysom, choshun she'korin oysom, that when they hear in this world their name being mentioned, they immediately arrive because they feel that they're being called to divine service. When they see that it was just somebody calling his friend on the phone, they'll be angry. There'll be some form of divine anger over there, or spiritual anger. So why is that we use some malachim's names? He says, why? Why? Because we know, we've met them before. We've met Raphael, we've met Gabriel in many instances in Tanakh, with perhaps even when it comes to meeting Avram. It's Surah Abrios. We've read Israel. So says the Zecher David, it depends what type of angel it was. If it's an angel who's already been in this world, then they know that using their name in a certain sense isn't a call to service, whereas that's different to an angel which is Mesharis Lefanai Lefnim. What we're going to be doing next week, God willing, is trying to appreciate what is it, can we address angels? Can we ask them for things? Can we ask them to bless us? And that, Mr. Shimon, we'll focus on Shalom Aleichem and Machnis Erachim. Thank you very much. Looking forward to learning.